Hi, and welcome back to A Twist of Fate. This week's episode, we are talking about the Boy in the Box case. The Boy in the Box case refers to an unidentified 3 to 7-year-old boy that had been found killed and left beaten and naked on the side of a road in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on February 25th, 1957. The boy was clean, had a fresh haircut. His fingernails had been cut. However, he had been savagely beaten and was extremely malnourished. The little boy had been covered with scars. Some had been surgical, the most notable being on his ankle, groin, and chin. His cause of death is believed to have been homicide by blunt force trauma. He is still unidentified as no one has come forward to claim his body. The little boy is also known as America's unknown child. His case remains unsolved and is still active. In February of 1957, the child's body had been found wrapped in a plaid blanket in the woods in Fox Chase, Philadelphia. His naked body had been placed in a cardboard box, which had been the packaging for a bassinet sold by JCPenney. It looked like his fresh haircut had been done after he had died, due to the little clumps of hair that had stuck to his body. His body was first found by a man who had been checking his muskrat traps. However, he was afraid to call the police since he didn't want his traps confiscated. The man decided against calling them. A few days later, another man, this time a college student who had been driving around and seen a rabbit run into the woods, knowing about the traps, the young man had pulled over to check it out, and instead found the body. He was also nervous to call the police. However, the next day he decided to report it after he had heard about the disappearance of Mary Jane Barker. The weather was cold and rainy in February in Philadelphia, so his time of death couldn't be accurate. The medical examiner estimated that the little boy had died anywhere from a few days to even a few weeks before his body had been found. Police received the report the same day the man had called it in. The little boy's fingerprints were taken, and investigators were pretty confident that this would come up with something. Unfortunately, no one ever came forward with any information about who the boy was or what had happened to him. Even cross-checking his footprints and handprints didn't come up with anything, which suggested to them that he wasn't born in a hospital. This case gained massive amounts of attention from the media in Philadelphia and the Delaware Valley. The Philadelphia Inquirer had printed a sketch that had depicted the boy's likeness, and they were posted across the entire area and were included with every gas bill that was sent out in envelopes in Philly. The scene where the box was found had been combed through by 270 Police Academy recruits. There, they had found an adult man's blue corduroy cap, the boy's scarf, and someone's white handkerchief with the letter G stitched into it at the corner. When police went to the store the handkerchief was made, the shop owner told them it had been custom made for the man. She had said the man was between 26 and 30 years old, with blonde hair and nothing majorly identifiable. After the man paid with cash, she never saw him again. Investigators then released pictures of the boy, fully clothed and in a seated position, as if to make him look more alive, to see that if that would lead to any more clues. Even with the publicity surrounding the case, no one came forward. On March 21, 2016, the little boy was added to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's database, and they had released a forensic facial reconstruction of the boy. There has been a lot of tips, and many people tell their theories surrounding the case. Even though most had been thrown out or debunked, two of the theories had sparked the interest of the police and the media, and they had been deeply investigated. The first theory involves the foster home that was about 1.5 miles from where the body was found. In 1960, Remington Bristow, who worked at the medical examiner's office and had kept up with the case until he died in 1993, had gotten in touch with a psychic from New Jersey who gave him the description of a house. When she was brought to Philadelphia, she led the man right to the foster home. When he had gone to an estate sale at the home, Bristow had seen a bassinet that looked like the one in the box. They were blankets hung on the clothesline that were similar to the ones that the boy had been wrapped in. He believed that it was possible that the boy was actually the stepdaughters of the man who ran the home, and believed that they had gotten rid of him to keep the stepdaughter's secret of being an unwed mother. Regardless of the circumstantial evidence, investigators still couldn't find any links between the little boy and this family. The man and his stepdaughter, who the man had actually ended up marrying, had been interviewed in 1998 by Tom Augustine, the Philadelphia police lieutenant who was in charge of the case, and different members of a group of retired policemen and profilers. After this, the investigation into the foster home was closed. Another theory was told in February of 2002 by a woman who had only been identified as Martha. Investigators did consider her theory, however, still kept in mind that she did suffer from mental illness. The woman claimed that it was her abusive mother who had gone and bought the little boy, whose name was supposedly Jonathan, sometime in the summer of 1954. The little boy was put through both extreme physical abuse and sexual abuse for 2.5 years. According to this woman, one night the boy had thrown up his dinner of baked beans and as a consequence had been beaten. His head had been slammed on the floor repeatedly until he was fading in and out of consciousness. Then it was decided that he would take a bath and that's when he had died. The details Martha gave did match some details the police had, such as the coroner did confirm the boy had eaten baked beans, and the skin on his fingers were wrinkled from water. The boy's haircut had been from the mother as a way to hide the boy's identity. After the boy had drowned, according to Martha, her mother's next decision was to force her to help dump the body in the woods. This mystery woman had claimed that while they were preparing to take Jonathan out of the trunk, a man had stopped to see if they needed help. Immediately, Martha was ordered to stand in front of the car's license plate while her mother told the man everything was fine. Martha's story had been confirmed in 1957 when a male witness had said that the boy's body was placed in a box that had already been dumped there. Despite a few details matching, police weren't able to verify most of her story. For example, they had contacted their own neighbors who had access to the house, and they had told them that they never saw a little boy at that house. After that, her story was completely dismissed and was just considered ridiculous, even though she completely knew details to the case that weren't released to the public. Frank Bender, a forensic artist, had also come up with a theory that the little boy was actually raised as a girl, going off of the length of the hair strands still stuck to the body and how the eyebrows were styled. Bender released a sketch of the child with longer hair in 2008. Back in 2016, two writers, Jim Hoffman from Los Angeles, California, and Luis Romano from New Jersey, had come out and said that they believed that they had potentially found an identity of a father from Memphis, Tennessee, and requested that the boy's DNA be compared to this family that they suspected. This theory was originally discovered by a man in Philadelphia who had introduced the two writers. He collected the evidence and presented it with the help of Jim Hoffman to the Philadelphia Police Department and the group of retired policemen and profilers in 2013. Romano heard about the theory in December of 2013. He agreed to help the men get a certain family member's DNA in January. The sample was immediately sent to the investigators in Philadelphia. The local investigators said they'd follow their lead, however, would still need to do their own research surrounding the information given and the DNA samples. Homicide Sergeant Baum Kuhlmeier confirmed in 2017 that the DNA had been compared. However, there was no connection. The little boy had originally been buried in a potter's field, which, if you don't know, is a cemetery for paupers and the unidentified. His original headstone read, "Dear Heavenly Father, bless this unknown boy." However, the body had been exhumed in 1998 to extract DNA for the comparison, which was taken from a tooth. He was then reburied at Ivy Hill Cemetery in Cedar Brook, Philadelphia. His coffin, headstone, and funeral service was actually paid for by the son of the man who had paid for the original service. The little boy's headstone reads, "America's unknown child," and some of the city residents keep up with the grave and keep it decorated with flowers and stuffed animals. In August 2018, the genetic genealogist that had helped in identifying the Golden State Killer announced that they were going to use that same DNA profiling to try and identify this little boy through familial DNA. In April of 2021, an article was released by CBS Philadelphia that said, "Philadelphia homicide detectives 2 years ago, would be three now, got an order to exhume the remains of the boy in the box. What they were able to retrieve this time for DNA purposes was sent to a lab in Europe that now has given them their biggest break yet." Homicide Captain Jason Smith commented on being able to find out what his name is. He said, "This is the closest. This is the closest we have gotten. They have a DNA profile that they hope leads them to identifying family of the boy, this has given investigators a whole new direction to follow. It is possible that there could be a family out there, and it is even possible that the killer is still alive. This has been A Twist of Fate. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, if you have any questions or requests, feel free to message me. Have a great day.